This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, we should say hosts, but also realtors with Oakland Realty downtown in Vancouver. Today, a really phenomenal episode. We've mentioned it on our show for the last few weeks. This is the MLA Intel Report Unpacked with Cameron McNeil and Ryan Lalonde, executive directors and co-founders of MLA Canada.
I love this conversation. I said I was excited about it because their world is one in which they have a lot of skin in the game and all their clients have a lot of skin in the game. And I think it really comes through in the conversation. This is sharp analysis about, especially about the presale market. And there's some interesting analysis in here of how to analyze a presale versus a resale.
Huge takeaways.
Huge takeaways. Things I'd never heard before. It was an exciting conversation.
These guys, you know, I think anyone who's listened to, I think Cameron's been on six times. This is his sixth time being on the show. Ryan's been on five times. And anyone that's listened to these episodes, they know that MLA is constantly sifting through the data and finding like the nuggets of information about, you know, how can we get more insight into the market? And that's what we're really sharing on this program is we're talking about everything going on in the development community, things going on in the economy that we're watching for, how to find a deal, things going on in presale versus resale. There's so many amazing takeaways from this episode. So
this is the presale forecast. This is the presale forecast in my mind. I feel like we spend a lot of the early part of the year doing forecasts, Adam. I just came across a past guest fan favorite, Richard Whitstock's Twitter handle. Don't go on Twitter very much anymore. I had 2 minutes this morning. Of course, went down a Twitter rabbit hole. But he's such a great follow on there. This is from 11 hours ago. Here's Richard's forecast. And I think he put it on Twitter. So this is public. I can quote him here.
I think if you reference, it's okay.
Okay. Richard Whitstock, Domus Homes. Apartment sales up about 30% this month over January 2023. Inventory is still extremely low, similar to January 23 levels. New listing activity is similar to 2023. Also, last year prices rose 6.3% January to May. Hard to see a scenario where we don't blow that out of the water this spring.
Yeah.
Now, does this feel, I feel like, and we talk about this with Cameron and Ryan, like there feels like there's a lot of energy. It's getting very busy. And yet all the forecasts seem very muted still. And this is the first one where I've seen, okay, somebody kind of putting their neck on the line going, the vibe out there along with the listings versus kind of the ramping up in activity, it feels more than 1% or 2% this year.
Right. And we should say, I mean, even just anecdotally, but lots of conversations that we're having with people, the activity has changed. The sentiment has completely changed since late last year. Like the new year has really changed the momentum of the market has changed with the new year, I should say.
Absolutely.
And really what we're noticing on our own listings is a totally different level of activity. So yeah.
People are out at the opens.
People are writing offers too now. So, you know, and I'm seeing multiple offers, which we haven't seen in a while. So
that's right.
So Matt, we should also say before we get to this conversation with Cameron and Ryan, this episode is sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate company in Vancouver, our office in the Canby Corridor. I should say this is a new listing that just went live.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
Super exciting. New listing went live Monday and open houses both Saturday, Sunday, 2 to 4. You can find it on VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. 202-2100 West 3rd Avenue in Kitsilano. This is on Arbutus and 3rd, Adam. It's a block off of West 4th, okay?
Wow.
Like the prime West 4th.
Center ice Kits.
Three blocks to the beach. What, four or five blocks to the Arbutus Greenway. The new SkyTrain is 4 or 5 blocks. You can't get this location. You can't get better. 2-bed, 2-bath, 937 square feet. We're listed at 929.
This under $1 million in kits.
Eh? Under $1 million for a large 2-bed and under $1,000 a foot.
Wow.
So there you go. Check it out at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Not to be missed. When you're over there, hit sell with us, where you can download our most downloaded plan document PDF of all time.
Yeah. And it's an instant download. So you sign up for it. It gives you an immediate download. You get to look at the plan. This is the sold plan. Sold stands for start on launch date. So you pick your launch date and you work your way backwards. Really, it's a step-by-step guide how to get your home ready for the market. So go over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, click sell with us, and you can get that instant download. Of course, lots of agents throughout the Lower Mainland, Alberta.
Yeah.
We've got a lot in Kelowna.
You could sell with us. You can get that document. You can also sell with us.
Yeah.
You can also sell with us. Yeah.
So if you're looking to sell this spring, it's a good time. It's a good time to be thinking about next steps to get a property ready, because the market is heating up. But without further ado, Matt, our conversation with Cameron and Ryan. This is Cameron McNeil, Ryan Lalonde, both executive directors and co-founders of MLA Canada.
Fantastic having them back.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly 4 decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular, with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to 3-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one-beds to 3-beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Cameron McNeil and Ryan Lalonde, executive directors and co-founders of MLA Canada, and a couple of beauties,
as we've been told.
Yeah, no, we appreciate you you guys coming back on. This is a big episode. I think this is 4th for you, Ryan, if I'm not mistaken, and 5th for you, Cam. And we actually we got you a little something to honor that, and are having you on before, where in the summer, where the studio gets a little hot, we got you some V-Rep tanks.
I thought
appreciate
it's in an espresso bag. I was thinking it was like a couple sleeves of espresso to wake us up here.
This is just for when you come back and join us in the summer, and hopefully you will.
Oh, wait. But, Ryan's been on 5 times.
Oh, 5 times and 6 times. Yeah, sorry. That's my mistake. But,
it is an extra.
They
large.
Ran out of larges.
This is amazing.
This is like a small for me. I appreciate it. Yeah.
We couldn't remember who was bigger. Anyways, we appreciate you guys coming back. So yeah, thanks for that. So can you maybe start by telling us a little bit about yourselves and MLA Canada?
Oh, you want me to find? No, I open these all the time. This is up to you.
Sure, you bet. Cameron McNeil, not born in Vancouver, but came here before I can remember. And so I consider myself born and raised Vancouver. Went to UBC, met my wife there, and made my home here in Vancouver, and have been in the real estate development industry for 33 years. And have always been on the sales, marketing, creation, delivery, consumption side of that. And coming up about 20, 23, 24 years in our own business, and have really enjoyed the ride.
Great.
Yeah, you know, not too dissimilar to me. Not born in Vancouver, from small town Penticton.
Right.
Which you guys love to give me a good time about. I appreciate that. Similar to Cam, though, this is for the most part the only career that I've ever had. So I've been in real estate one way or another since I was a very young boy. My parents loved building homes. Worked on construction sites through high school and university, and then found my way into the industry in the early 2000s. So this will be my 20th year in real estate, which I can't believe how fast it's gone. You guys are not too dissimilar. We're of the same vintage, right?
Yeah.
It's flown by.
It has flown by. It goes quick because I feel like the pace of this industry too, it makes it even go quicker.
Yeah.
But
I remember when you guys first started the podcast as well, right?
It's almost eight, nine years ago. Yeah, I know. It's kind of incredible that we've been doing this for a decade.
Wow.
Or near a decade. Yeah. The 9-year noose. Yeah.
As we call it.
Yeah. You obviously love it as much as it is.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the origin story of MLA? I mean, MLA's been around forever. It's kind of a household name in the industry. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I mean, keep going on that if you want. So Cameron and myself, we'd known each other, I think, from the early 2000s as well, right?
Yeah.
A lot of overlap in terms of socially. And, you know, we found ourselves in, you know, early 2014, 15, having some conversation around what would it look like for two organizations that were involved in sales and marketing programs throughout the Lower Mainland? What would it look like if they came together and how could we do more together? As a partnership. And so that formally happened in 2016. Since then, we've been very focused on growing out our team, adding incredible value to the programs that we're privileged to work on. And I think a big part of what gets us both out of the bed is we just love creating real estate experiences, right? And whether that's how a home buyer enjoys a home or whether that's how we have the opportunity to storytell and create incredible homes at the Lower Mainland. I think that journey's been a really fun one, especially over the last 3 to 4 years, right? The industry's gone through a lot of struggle and a lot of change. And mm-hmm. through that, innovation is just part of the equation today, right? You have to have that part of your formula. And
would you say it's happening it seems like it's happening so quickly now, like over the last 20 years, is the last 3-4 in terms of innovation and change, is it accelerating in your minds?
That's a really tough question. We talk about that quite a bit. You know, I recall for the first decade of my career, it really didn't feel like the shifts were that dramatic, right? We might have gone from, you know, maybe how we take a phone call to having a digital fax number, right? And email became more important. Online marketing became a little bit more important. But for the most part, the way you were selling real estate in 2005 didn't greatly differ to how you were selling it in 2014. What really feels different for us in our space is technology, right? So having really strong data platforms, for us, it's proprietary, but that's been a game changer in the industry because as so many tier ones and so many great brands are leaning into technology, mm-hmm. that allows that pace of change to happen really quickly. And so it does feel like the iterations now, like the turns are happening quicker and quicker. That's really exciting because you're seeing every brand that are the brands that are in our hearts within the home building community of British Columbia. You're seeing them make notable investments into people, into software, trying to change how that experience looks and feels. And I think it's hard to say how much it truly has changed in the last 1 to 2 years, but I'd say like when you think about the last 5 and you think about just data alone, it's night and day.
Yeah, and I think maybe I see it from a sort of a wider perspective. I agree with all of that. You know, when I look back at the evolution of Vancouver as a city, and I think about some of the major chess moves, you know, I started in 1992 and, you know, it was like one of the first towers in Yale Town, 501, that I was very lucky to be involved with. And, you know, you look at downtown now in the peninsula, it's just a completely different place in, you know, what was that, 22 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I dragged in some of the old marketing material to show our team and there was no one was using the internet. So there's no URL, no website. So, you know, we're talking like radio ads and print ads and people coming in and going through an education experience one-on-one with a sales team. And so I can go back and look at all these kind of these moments in time where technology came in and enabled our business or shifted our business. So I still see ourselves in a bricks and mortar and finance business. People are still consuming housing. the complexity of bringing housing to market has increased, but nevertheless, the city is going to continue to grow and home ownership is going to continue to be the motivator that drives our industry. Technology is a layer that's coming in, and I think changing how we make better business decisions and how we communicate with consumers. And consumers are much more educated now and have access to information. They have direct access, which is very exciting. But nevertheless, you know, I don't see the industry massively disruptively changing. For example, you know, are people like all of a sudden going to stop consuming homes and, you know, just really ramp up the rental side of the business? You know, mm-hmm. there's some of these trends are kind of ebbing and flowing, but fundamentally, I think in 15 years from now, we're still, as an industry, building houses. Consumers are consuming housing. It's going to be their single largest purchase in most people's lives, and, you know, all the financing considerations. And so I see it much more perhaps from that perspective when I ask that question.
Yeah.
You know, like a really interesting part of that would be, like, let's just say COVID, right? Like, has technology shifted? Right. So pre-COVID, I think land values, if you look throughout the lower mainland, for the most part, they were centered around the downtown core and parts of maybe some of those energy centers that are starting to come alive. Richmond was valued quite a bit differently back then than it was today. I think it's not necessarily happening within the industry that some of that change is so stark, but I think it's when you think about the power of Zoom and be able to work from home and the shift in terms of values and maybe consumer behaviors because of that, right? Like where you gather, how you connect, mm-hmm. I think certainly how you live, all of that is so different and all of that is impossible without technology. And so it's hard to say that it's just a real estate story, right? It's certainly a lifestyle that's shifted. And as a result of that, we're seeing value in the way that you put projects together and the complexity of those projects have to obviously keep some stride to that.
Were you guys surprised? Like one thing I remember, and I feel like if we went back on this show and listened, you know, work from home, the push out to, you know, further east into the valley, more space, needing a home office. In a lot of ways, I don't want to put words in your mouth, although I think if we went back, we were both thinking that we'd snap back kind of after COVID. Everybody would go back to the office sooner than it's actually happened. It seems like this hybrid model is here to stay. Is that surprising to you, or is that kind of what you guys were projecting out from, say, 2021? Because it does, just to put it in a larger context here, a lot of the people we had on the show were talking about, oh, how they're going to change amenity space, for instance. And sometimes it felt like, wow, this is kind of knee-jerk for something that's hopefully a very finite period in which we're all from home. And then it's like, let's get back to normal, right?
I mean, it felt like a really fluid moment in time when you were in the middle of COVID designing homes for 2023, 2024. And what I think a lot of the development partners that we work with did a really good job of was trying to be thoughtful about, of course, we need to account for what we know about real estate in the past, but we also have to account for what it could look like in the future. And so those types of conversations were absolutely happening around the boardroom where the pendulum is way out. And we think that it's probably quite a bit further out than it might be in the future. And so let's try to find some middle ground, right? Some moderation to how we think about programming amenities, the type of value that we add inside of our homes. And a lot of it was centered, at least in our rooms, was centered around demographics, right? What are those shifts that we're expecting to see? But there was a strong expectation, I think, from our leadership team that you're going to see a new value formula emerge. You're going to see suburban replace urban demand. Growth outside of energy centers is going to happen. And so I think a big part of what we've experienced and certainly like what we've learned is maybe where we're landing today is going to be maybe the trend line that we're going to experience for the next 24 to 36 months, right? And it seems like a lot of businesses are landing where somewhere between 1 to 2 days of flexibility through the work week for the organizations or the services that really rely on relationships, that rely on creative collaboration among teams, right? It feels like there's some organizations that have completely pivoted over and delivering complete work from home. And that's interesting for certain businesses. I think for ours, as Cam said, it's a complex business. Mm-hmm. It's relationship-based. And I think collaboration and creativity, right? Driving innovation is just a big part of the story for our space.
Yeah, that's well said, Ryan. I don't think it'll never snap back to what it was. And what's really been an incredible dividend from this has been particularly in a cosmopolitan city like Vancouver, which has strains just due to its scale and constraints, it's unlocked options for people. Mm. It's unlocked new geographies and more flexibility, you know, drop the kids off, make a call and then get in the office by 10 or take that day off and still feel that support and that cultural shift in the broader employment space. But every business is going to be a little bit different. But overall, just unlocking some of those options is such a healthy thing. And it's obviously opened up demand for secondary centers or more of the suburban locations, as Ryan was just mentioning. But I do remember going back, this may be in the middle of COVID when we did a show with you. I recall us saying that both Ryan and I predicted it wasn't going to create a black hole in the urban centers.
Right.
You know, that there's enough demand to be able to backfill any of the individuals that are making choices to move out of the more urban areas. And that's exactly what's happened. You know, we're seeing, you know, maybe a few little pockets that are languishing a bit, but, you know, in the balance of things and as things start to continue to shake out going forward, we certainly think that the high density urban areas are going to remain very desirable.
Maybe just to changing gears a little bit and talking about the MLA Intel report and some of the findings that you had with this report that's going to be talking mostly about 2023. We're kind of in the new year here in 2024. And of course, we want to talk about projections for 2024. First of all, maybe what is the MLA Intel report and why do you produce it?
And who's it for?
Yeah.
Who reads it?
Yeah, no, we should say
we read it.
We've talked about it. Yeah, we've read it. It did go out on the MLA because we're subscribers out on your email this morning.
Yeah,
right? So it's out in the environment now.
Yeah, we dropped it this morning on the MLA Newswire, and the Intel report is really a perspective. It's a moment in time perspective around what we came to learn about 2023, and then gives us an opportunity to maybe potentially forecast or share some perspective where we think 2024 will go. For us, we just feel that really understanding and data just plays a really important part of making well-informed, educated decisions on the recommendations that we're part of. And so this is an easy way for us to share with the marketplace. I think there's a wide range of audiences here, mm-hmm. right? What the data tells us in terms of past Intel releases, certainly the development community is very active with this report. They do use that information. Agents, right? So all of our agent partners, really important for us to be able to share what we've learned. As you guys know, we're very collaborative. And so we look for them for guidance from our agent partners in terms of where demand is going. And then I think to our home buyer audiences, of course, we know that not only do we propagate through the traditional channels, but a significant amount of pickup happens with actually those that are consuming real estate. Mm-hmm. And that feedback is of course something that we want. And so if there's anyone that is listening that wishes to share some opinions or perspectives, we'd really encourage you. I'm assuming that you guys will link it to the podcast below. I believe that we'll also be able to list out maybe a couple of the other sources that you guys were referencing. So the Newswire is another great solution, mm-hmm. right? That's a daily roundup of every piece of real estate news that's hitting the wire. We try to make sure that lands in your inbox first thing every morning. And again, between the Intel report and the Newswire, it's all about just trying to understand what's happening in real estate.
I'm just going to take off my... is that okay?
No.
Trying to get it hotter in here.
I just want to wear this tonight. No, just
keep it clean.
I'm going to go out for dinner and that puppy.
So I just want to get, because one of the interesting things about that report, and I think it's clearly, it's a sophisticated report, right? But I'd say it seems like all those markets would be interested in it for sure. You do a developer survey. I had to look that up, which is super interesting, right? So you guys go and all your developer partners, you conduct a survey. I'm kind of curious, what is the development community thinking about where the risks are, what the opportunities are, what's exciting for 2024? Where are they at?
That's sort of a soft pitch into this question. I was just reflecting that, you know, it seems like everyone's an economist right now. It's quite hilarious, right? So I was at an economic forum last week, the head economist from RBC, and somebody, I won't describe the somebody, but anyone could pick any stereotype in their minds right now, and this person should not know anything about economics. And after his presentation, this individual stands up and says, "I've been watching the yield curve, and it is this complicated description of something that they've been watching a channel on, and kind of made the economist laugh. And I mean, that's the reality, is that everybody's watching this information. The sophistication level's gone way up. This was originally designed for a sophisticated audience, mostly our our developer. Then we, of course, realized, as Ryan was saying, that our realtor partners really value it, shared it with that. Now we share it widely with our consumers. Our Newswire has, what are we up to now for on that? 12,000 or something like that on that now. And so lots of people are watching that stuff, and it really aggregates a lot of that really good information. But as Ryan was saying, it's the insights that come out of that that are hard, or that are probably the more important parts of that.
Right.
And, you know, so specifically your question around,
I'll go a step further. It starts a conversation.
Absolutely.
Right across all of these topics. And I think like the heartbeat of our space is all about collaboration. Right. And so at very least, it provides some great reference data points that early in the year starts to establish itself in board meetings around, you know, what do you think is going to happen in immigration? What do you think is going to happen in interest rates? Where do you see the yield curve going? Right?
Yeah, specifically with developers, I remember last summer when we were chatting, you know, every developer has quite different objectives and risk tolerances and forces. So the conversation, starts broadly, but everyone has a little bit different perspective on that. So, you know, some have the luxury of being more patient and others less so. Some are more optimistic about, you know, what the short run looks like. So I must admit it varies quite a bit, but nevertheless, the development partners that we work very closely with are pretty optimistic. They're feeling that it's not going to roar back, that, you know, as interest rates start to come down, that's only going to happen because our economy is slowing a little bit as well. So they know that those are kind of contrary forces, that it's going to moderate a little bit. But the overall demand is solid and housing is needed. And the vast majority of our development partners are very optimistic in the certainly in the medium to long term, very optimistic, but in the short term, pretty optimistic as well. So we're going to see a lot more projects coming back into the market. The good news is that our industry and our development partners are pretty sophisticated. And so they're going to not all jump in the pool at the same time. There's going to be some self regulation when it comes to that inventory coming into the market.
And would you say more optimistic about 2024 than 2023?
I would say that. Ryan, what do you think?
It's like a moment in time, right? At the very beginning of 2023, I think that we were feeling pressures that were very different than today, right?
Right.
So there was the expectation that potentially we could land in a recession, right? And we were all feeling that at the very beginning. And now, you know, we've endured 1 year of that. We've all been uncomfortable in different ways around it. I think a lot of developers have pivoted. And now it feels like as we go into 2024, Cam's right, there's just a lot of optimism, right? There's a lot of expectation that rates are going to fall. You're going to see markets expand. I think there's some very specific markets that probably perform really, really well. Cam shared this a few times, but there's no doubt this year it's going to be really patchy and scrappy, right? Lots of different marketplaces have an incredible amount of inventory to come. And some of them are big brands, right? Like really strong, established, well-financed tier ones that will have a very different set of offerings than I think some of the others that wrap around those communities, a little bit smaller in nature, maybe they're wood frame, they'll be a little bit more reactive. And so overall, it's exciting, lots of positivity, but we were at UDI Forecast last week, and it felt like there's a degree of conservatism on that positivity, mm-hmm. right? And I think a lot of that just centers around inflation, right? How sticky is it and what happens to those rates and when do they begin to come off?
It's funny just because, you know, we had Brendan Augmentson, the chief economist for the BCREA on. And I feel like the overall conversation was really positive. And then at the end, it's like, so where are we going to be at the end of the year? And he's like, probably up about 1.5. And you're like, so the market's basically flat. But it feels so much, I don't know, for me, it feels so much more positive in general than it did a year ago, for sure. But I guess cautious optimism is the way to put it.
I was listening to that podcast the day after you dropped it. I was on the treadmill and you know, like the excitement is kind of growing and growing and growing. Right? He was touching on a lot of great data points.
Yeah.
It felt like it was going to be a big banger year.
Yeah.
And then
do you think 10%, 15%? Yeah, like, yeah. What are we going to do? It's like, we're in the same place in January 2025.
I mean, we'll touch on that a little bit later today, but I think that we definitely have some predictions that we're feeling, and my guess is that we're both higher than 1.5%.
Maybe before we get to that, can we get like a rough summary maybe for how 2023 was in the presale world and space, just for somebody who's listening who maybe wasn't following as closely as they should have been last year?
Yeah, sure. So, 2023 started out with a lot of cause for concern, right? We had just gone through steady growth.
of the overnight interest rate level. And I think, you know, there was going to be 7 announcements throughout 2023. In the end, we saw 3 25 base point increases, and that just continued to create these really strong headwinds for the industry. The end result is that we saw, you know, a strong number of projects still find their way into the marketplace, just over 100, right? That's about half of some of the peak markets that, that pre-sales experienced. In Vancouver, Metro Vancouver, we saw about, 26,000 transactions happen in the resale space. That's obviously well under some of the highs that we've experienced. And from a 10-year perspective, obviously a very challenging time for home sellers. I think across the whole, a lot of developers had to pivot, right? Many home builders had to think about the impact of interest, not only in terms of how it was driving transactions, but then also in terms of when the right time to move into the market would be, making sure that they could achieve those pre-sale tests. In 2023, you know, sales revenues was one of the number one talking points within the developer community. Can they achieve the revenues that they need in order to offset rising construction costs? 2024, you fast forward, the number one cause for concern today is, can we finance these programs, right? How do we have access to capital, right? Still, revenue and construction costs are part of that conversation. But on a whole, 2023 was just a very average year for pre-sales. And although it didn't feel like that, there was just over 13,049 units that were released into the market. So they were actually put in a position where a homebuyer could connect with them, could purchase. Of those, about 6,000 sold, right? So just over 46% of all of the inventory that found its way into the market ended up by the end of the year actually being transacted on. And that's hard to think about, because I think when all of us are reflecting on what it felt like at any one point in time, I think our expectation is that that number was going to be quite a bit lower than almost half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. I'm just going back to one thing. I just want to, for people out there listening and myself included. So 2023 was a year in which the development community was concerned about hitting those price targets. It sounds like in relation to basically rampant inflation and increasing costs across the board. 2024, it sounds like it's financing challenges, if I understand correctly, cost of money, ability to get that financing done. Can we talk about how that impacts projects coming to market? Like what are the considerations there, and how does that play out on the ground differently?
Yeah, you want to?
Yeah, do you mean, when you say financing challenges, you mean from the developer or the consumer of that housing? You mean
the developer? Like, that's my understanding of how the development community, based on what you were saying, Ryan, is what they're concerned about this year is different than last year, and it's more around financing, if I had that right?
Absolutely.
The financing piece of the puzzle for the development community is a real challenge right now. It's not just because of interest rates being higher. Banks and all lending avenues for the development community have really tightened up significantly. And, you know, and as a result, it's much harder for a developer to achieve financing, or if they do, you know, financing that helps make sense of those projects. The good news for that is that, again, that just self-regulates the supply. We don't see a whole bunch of flood coming in. Developers, the vast majority of those that are astute, are going to make sure that they're comfortable with their financing options before they bring their projects to market. And so, it was an environment where more developers were patient and sat back, and as a result, we saw less projects than we would historically come into market. And as a result, you know, we see the values have maintained themselves. And also, I want to remind everybody that you know, we can't. When I say we, the industry can't sell real estate any less expensive than it's on the market right now. If prices don't support the levels that they're at now, those projects just won't come to market at all. So the way I see it is values are for pre-sale product or any new real estate is bouncing on the bottom. We've sort of hit a floor, and you know, Ryan and I are confident that that's has nowhere to go but up, but it certainly can't go down. So the financing is a really big important part of that, you know, as our construction costs and some of the other realities that we're faced with. But you know, that will ease up in 2024 to some extent. Partly because of rates, partly because the banks are going to start to open up and, you know, be open for business a little bit more than they were in 23.
I guess one of the insights that falls out of that too, if you're a home buyer, right, and you're listening to this conversation, because financing is top of mind for home builders today, sales revenue and construction costs are falling secondary. You're going to see really strong incentives in place in the early part of this year to unlock any sales that allow a development partner to be able to achieve a finance test that allows them to start construction, right? And so what you can expect in the early parts of Q1 and Q2 is for unsold inventory, typically in a tower that might be anywhere from 30% to 70% of that tower is still being available. You'll see really strong incentive programs rolled out in order to be able to mop up that inventory. And that allows our development partners to put homes into the market, because the only way to get the density out of the ground is to find banks that are going, that are obviously going to support those projects. And that has to come with a strong pre-sale.
No, just thinking about the perennial, where's the deal? And we've asked you this before, but if you were out, you know, looking for a pre-sale, single pre-construction unit right now, would you be looking to get in first on the ground floor of a you know, VIP access to some development in the early part of this year? Would you circle back to a project that launched maybe, whatever, 6 months ago, 9 months ago? What do they have left? What are the incentives? Like, where in the pre-sale marketplace would you be looking, knowing what you know?
That's certainly an interesting question, but
that's an easy question.
How do you time the market?
You know, first and foremost, avoid the desperate seller. I think priority number one is in a healthy, balanced market, a consumer has choice, and it's the kind of market that Ryan and I love. Excellent value stands out, and so whether you're buying at the beginning or at any stage in the project, I think it's very important that a consumer is able to do their research, work with a really good realtor that knows the market, and they don't get caught up in the hype of a project, mm-hmm. just buy because the fear of loss. I think it's much more about look at all the options and make sure you're getting exceptional value when you stack them up. One, together, buy a neighborhood that you believe in, or more importantly, you want to live in long term. And I know I'm a broken record on this, but I think it's less about those kind of those really, those timing, oh man, if I waited one extra week, I would have saved $2,000. Like, I think this is such a big, major decision for people that I think it's far more important for people to, whether it's an investment or for someone to live in themselves. I think obviously someone's living itself, it's also a big investment. So I think it's much more about very, very carefully looking at the broader landscape, choosing from a reputable developer that can execute on that project and something that is going to provide great relative value. And, so you guys in the past have put me on the spot or Ryan on the spot, what do you like or not like? Where would you buy? And at the end of the day, the overall region is going to do well relative basis. And so advice number one, buy a quality asset in an area that you want to live in. Mm-hmm. And if it's just a straight investment that you're never going to walk inside, well, then of course there's maybe some other nuances. But what is nice is that those great locations are also great for investment. They're great for tenants and they're great for future demand as well.
Yeah, that's and we should dig into that a bit, but that's funny. But we over the years, I feel like this year more than ever, we've talked about just buying tier one product, like just buying a really great product. And you see it time after time when it, even in soft markets like Q4 of last year, the good product was still selling in the resale market, right? Which is like a lesson. Like, it's easy to liquidate. Whenever you want to sell it, you can sell it.
Yeah, you bet.
It certainly feels like over the last 24 months, brand has mattered so much.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And it's not just because there's a brand associated. It's because what you can bank on or I think what you feel when you actually purchase a home from those brands, right? They've been very thoughtful about the offering. And the reality is that they've absolutely sweated over the details, right? And there's so many great brands out there, like whether it's a Bosa or it's a Strand or it's a Cressy or an Amicon or name any that are operating at that scale. And the reality is that the programs are so sophisticated. There's so many incredible resources that are touching these projects by the time that they find their way into the marketplace. I think that that's going to continue, right? Through 2024 and 2025, brand name is going to matter for a couple of reasons. One, of course, for the value that Cam's talking about all day, we're hunting how we can put value inside the four walls of the homes that we're a part of. But to the other part, earlier in the conversation around financing, right? Those big brands also come with strong guarantees, and they come with a track record of thousands of homes delivered. And institutions get behind that in a really meaningful way. So when you front deposits, sometimes it's 15%, sometimes it's 25%. When you are putting that money to work for you, you can bank that a home's going to be delivered at the end. And I think that that'll be one of the interesting fallouts of the market that we're about to go into is which brands actually deliver homes that they're promising.
Interesting. So is that, like in your mind, is that just a challenging economic times lead to consolidation and, you know, only the strong survive kind of moment? Is that what we're kind of entering into here?
You know, what we heard at UDI Forecast, I think is the general sense that the industry is feeling right now, which is the scale of these programs, the complexity of these programs, the cost of these programs, right? In order to actually deliver density, it has grown to a magnitude that just did not exist 20 years.
Right.
And so that barrier is absolutely increasing. I think that that's difficult. And also specifically just speaking to the notion that there'll be many development partners that are going to have to put programs into the marketplace with really strong incentives, deposit being one of them, in order to drive transactions because the performa is lean or not working. These high interest rates put a lot of pressure on home builders. And I think to your point and to Cameron's point, having a value brand that's been in the marketplace for 30 to 50 years that really understands the cycles, that's well capitalized, that has sophistication and expertise, those are the homes that are going to that are actually going to be built. And so I think it's also about recognizing that just because something is being sold does not mean that it will be built. And I think home buyers have to take caution because we're moving through a period where, you know, we have historical land values, we have rising input costs. It's very challenging to make programs work. But that doesn't mean that some developers won't try, that maybe should not be trying in the marketplace. And so picking through that, finding value, and that's the point of the question, right? Where is the value and what does the timing look like? I think Cam's right, you gotta look long. And I also have to, you know, you have to really think closely about who you're purchasing from.
This is making me think that creating supply is a little bit more complicated than rezoning around all the SkyTrain station hubs. it also makes me think.
It's not making me feel optimistic.
But it does, it also, and I haven't thought about this for a long time, but I feel like we had Colin Bowes on the show like
two or three years ago.
No. It was at least, but it was in a super, the market was raging at that time. And he actually was frustrated. He was like, man, he was talking about deficiencies in a deficiency walkthrough or something and how few deficiencies Boza had. But he's like, it all right now doesn't matter. Everybody's just trying to get a unit. It doesn't, brand is not as important. You know, we've spent 50 years or whatever building this brand. And now it's like when the chickens come home to roost, right? Where exactly. All that work of the grinding and the actual brand building really matters.
On a few occasions here, just spoken about tier one developers, those that have a reputation, be able to deliver and track record. You know, certainly there's a lot of developers that are maybe smaller or more boutique in their positioning or maybe just have more of a humble approach to their reputation that can execute 10 out of 10. And I think that's the point, is that we need to be able to execute at a 10 out of 10 level. And what you're referring to and what Colin Bowes was referring to was that the market was so hot that it could hide some of that. A 7 out of 10 was good enough. And in the long game, real estate is very complex. The bigger the projects, the more complex they are. But this applies for a duplex as much as it does, a three tower project with thousands of units. Being able to execute on a 10 out of 10 basis, what Ryan's speaking about, that when the consumer puts down a deposit, confidence that's going to be delivered as promised and going to exceed their expectations is going to be fulfilled. And that's what really matters. And so going all the way back to your question about what's the time, it is far less important than it is about whom you're buying for, and making sure you're buying relative value. And I'm going to repeat one other thing is that this industry cannot deliver housing any less expensively than it is right now. Mm-hmm. So if there's a gap in the market or maybe a resale or something like that, that seems like it's really cheap. Well, that might be a great opportunity to snap up because, you know, it's much harder to predict, 12 to 18 months. But if you're looking, 3, 5, 7 years down, everyone can be pretty confident that, in 2023, 2024, that was probably a pretty good time to get into the market.
You're going to look like a genius. No use.
I'm looking across the table. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Tell me more about that. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, why don't we talk about maybe some of the factors shaping 2024 then, and what's kind of hot on the minds of the development community?
Sure. I think you know, one of the, I think one of the bright spots right now is all the conversation that's happening around what will happen with interest rates, right? Feels like inflation has been far stickier than what some expected. And as a result of that, we have a very high overnight rate right now, and that's having a huge impact on interest rates. And the expectation is that those will be coming off at some point this year. Some are proposing that it's an April, May, June timeline, and there's others that are saying Q3, Q4.
Right.
What, you know, I was listening to some of the earlier, that you guys have had a great lineup so far of cast. Like, it's been top notch. And I think, you know, Brandon did a really good job. His note was that by the end of this year, the expectation is that it's somewhere between 3.5% and 4%. And that feels like a fairly conservative, maybe like an appropriate approach. We can all imagine how it could be a bit higher than that. But but if we land in that place, well, I think it's a signal to the marketplace that the interest rates that were experienced in 2023 that still had a fair number of transaction volumes at them, a lot of five-year fixes locked in. What it does is it proves out the values that we're at today. And Cameron's right, input costs aren't dropping. And so as a result of that, I think that relief provides optimism that transactions will pick up. And there's been markets that have been compressed as a result of those rates, right? The Fraser Valley, certainly parts of the Lower Mainland, in some points it's down anywhere from like 10 to 15 points from that peak. That's notable because it gives some opportunity for those markets to maybe expand out of that hole that it's in today. There's a few others. I mean, obviously the fundamentals around what's happening in the stock market, thinking quite a bit about what happens with inflation throughout the rest of the year. There's supply of new homes, right? We know the constraints there. And then of course there's supply of home buyers, immigration. And so we're trying to pay close attention. And you know, what we attempted to do with the Intel report that and it is try to provide some perspective around where each one of those numbers sits and then some perspective around how they're going to impact the market in 2024. I think the biggest driver is going to be those demand drivers. And so immigration is top front center for us. Whether it's rental or it's home ownership, what we do know is that there's an incredible demand for Vancouver and Fraser Valley real estate. It's a global demand, and we have real challenges on unlocking that supply, and that's not going to shift at any point too dramatically over the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just add to that there's some macro forces that show up either on our shores or in Greater Metro Vancouver real estate that can't be ignored. So, you know, Ryan touched on a little bit the stock market there, but you know, we also have, you know, $6 to $8 trillion in the US alone sitting on the sidelines of cash, just sitting there. And if interest rates come down, you know, there could be even a shock in the market on the positive side where people are looking for a return on that cash. And as they flow back from all those money market funds and bonds back, you know, flooding back in the equity markets, there's this euphoria for a while. And I think that there's going to be this optimism that shows up in the market. And people are sitting now, and you know, if you look at both the as Ryan was touching from a report, our stats showing the overall supply and the transactional volume being down, but they're still in a ratio that's maintaining values. And all of a sudden, that euphoria shows up. People are kind of, the reason why that is people are sitting on their hands, kind of waiting and watching. And all of a sudden, that euphoria shows up. People feel this sort of this buoyancy, and then that optimism starts to shift, and that consumer confidence starts to shift, and then it comes back. And so I just gave you the US stats, but Canada parallels that. And so, you know, we've had, as you know, incredible savings over the COVID time. And there are a lot of Canadians sitting on cash. Now, it's not broadly, but in the top 20%, there's a lot of cash that has been saved. And there's also $1 trillion expected to be gifted from the, you know, to the millennials and Gen X, from the baby boomers over the next 3 years, $1 trillion. And so, you know, we talk about this wealth transfer. I think a lot of people think it's upon, you know, parents' death, but it actually happens as a gift. You know, giving while living is the statement there, right? And so we are going to see this constant flow of wealth transfer happening in Canada, people unlocking equity in their real estate or taking advantage of those savings. So, you know, I just feel that we probably are seeing the time in the market, the latter half of 2023, the first half of 2024 is probably going to be the time when we're seeing the least amount of activity coming into the market. The latter half of this year, we're going to see a lot more real estate coming to the market. It's going to get consumed. And let's also remember that these real estate projects are long timelines. If it's concrete, it's, you know, 5 to 7 years once you work through the planning part, the planning and the marketing and the you know, development construction side. These long-term projects, we're making business decisions today that aren't going to be delivered for 7 years. And during that time, this growing strain that we have on housing. So I always come back to the long-term view and we're all trying to figure out, you know, what's going to happen this month. What do you think February is going to hold? Well, you know, the reality is there's going to be some geopolitical issue or something like that, some oil shock or something like that that we can't predict.
Right.
So we look at all the metrics that we can easily predict that we do have a crystal ball on, but there's going to be these outside forces. But long term, everything on a global basis, you know, point to Canada, Western Canada, BC, Vancouver being up and to the right.
Like just touching on that, yeah, I don't know how you can't be excited. Truly, you can't be excited about real estate right now, right? You have, you know, to your point, a trillion that's going to transfer. You have,
that's 3 years.
We have 3% population growth year over year over year. Like we're going after records nearly every year. You have rising input costs. We know that we can't build shelter fast enough, right? That's very, very clear. And you have rates that are about to drop, you know, anywhere from 100 basis points to 150 basis points, as long as we can prove out that inflation's behind us. And we have some markets that have just dropped 10 to 15% throughout the Lower Mainland. Like if you're looking for a set of circumstances that would identify
if you can't spot that.
And so whether it's, Cam's right, whether it's January, February, March, or April, that's going to be difficult where that exact trough point is. But you know what I think most sophisticated investors, most sophisticated home buyers are looking at is like, well, it's sometime between now and the next 6 months. And then there's a lot of upside that's going to put incredible pressure on price, right? And I think that if the notion is, what do we think is going to happen over the next 2 years? And how does that relate to maybe buying affordable real estate today? It's hard to imagine how real estate gets any more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Do you guys put the, so if we call the bottom, is the bottom November 2023? Is it potentially this year? This is all based on the fact that we just said, like, who cares about a month or two? But literally, like, are we out of it? Because in some ways, just based on phone calls and kind of anecdotally our team transactions, November feels like it might have been the bottom.
I went to dinner with about 20 agents last night for a thing at our brokerage, and everyone had the same thing to say. Like, their phone is ringing nonstop. Yeah. Everybody's getting ready. Like, it feels like we're at the beginning of like a real, like, proper spring launch.
Yeah. Here. Busier than last year at this time. Busy. That's for sure.
Yeah. I recall in July that I had a pretty optimistic outlook to a similar question that you guys hit me with, that I said that the rear view mirror was the rear view mirror is in the bottom.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like nothing but up from here. And I missed that one. We had a bit of a dead cat. We had this little spring flurry, yeah, and then kind of things cooled off again, and things came off a bit in the fall. Our values have been surprisingly resilient, and we're characterized by a market now where some pockets are strong and some are languishing, but not in a massive way.
Mm-hmm.
We strongly feel that you know, I use the expression bouncing on the bottom. What I mean by that is we're at a floor and I don't see our values eroding any further. But I still think it's going to be a bit choppy, meaning some markets are going to be stronger than others over the next 6 months. But nevertheless, I don't think that should scare anybody from buying. It's the opposite. I think it's, my message is just don't try to time it precisely. Like right. now is a great time to buy. As long as you can afford interest rates, you know, as long as you can, you can handle the interest rate question, that's a deeper dive there. But as long as you can do that and you can think in long term, I would buy a community that suits you and that you're excited about. And I'm a bit contrarian. I actually think some of those markets that are languishing are where the best values are. So anyways, I just feel that, that you know, I probably missed my timing a little bit here, but that's, again, because I'm always sort of thinking medium to long. And you know, I think that 2024 is going to be a bit interesting between now and the summer, and the fall will be very strong. But really what's going on, and the only reason why our buddy Tiff is holding on interest rates for a while longer is because he knows as soon as we release it, it's going to unlock this housing yeah. boom. And then we're going to get another rebound in inflation. So, you know, our Fed, you know, the US Feds are going to probably be a little more aggressive on the down, and we're going to hold on. And that's because we have such strong real estate fundamentals here. And really, he's just holding the dam closed longer and longer and longer. And eventually it's going to snap. We're going to have a bit of a rebound back.
What do you guys think? I mean, you guys are connected.
Well, I've been watching the yield curve bond. No, I haven't. I think that's well put. I also feel like there's a whole bunch of people that are watching the market super closely. And to your point last year, like we felt really optimistic in July as well. And then it was like the 1-2 punch of the back-to-back interest rate increases. And then it just shut down. So I feel like it's like inflation numbers right now really matter. Everybody's watching. Right now, there seems to be the optimism, like general consensus that, you know, we might see a full percentage drop this year. But I feel like it's all based on the numbers and the news cycles and that it could go either way.
Yeah, except in my, just speaking from people I'm talking to, it does feel like people who have kind of hit pause for the last year and a half are now like, all right,
they can't wait forever.
Yeah, like what's he saying about get off the pot? Like it life goes on, right? There's more right now. There's more people that I'm working with actively that are just ready to move, and they're sick of waiting. And yeah. And I feel like it's kind of like there's so many people like that in and around the Lower Mainland for the last 18 months, 2 years have been sitting waiting. And it's like, okay, we're done. We got to move.
And I wonder about the interest rate, like, because the one thing about how affordability has been hit by the interest rate and just qualifying stress tests, everything has really kind of shook loose the purse strings, I think, of the bank of mom and dad, because now you're in this situation where like last year, how much gifted money, just even like our client base, like it felt like it was a bigger factor than ever last year, the bank of mom and dad. So the $3 trillion that you're talking about over the next 3 years, if anything, I think, yeah, it feels like that's what's stabilizing the market in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, we're experiencing that as well in the sales force. We're seeing yeah. we're seeing a lot of support come from older generations helping the young generations.
Yeah, right.
And that's fueling. If I had to guess, though, it's going to be market dependent as well, right? So, like, you know, some of the worst data is coming out of places like Bowen Island, right? In terms of drops in appreciation, in terms of drop in price values, mm-hmm. Those resort markets, right? That relied on tourism and also relied on Airbnbs, but for the most part, these were secondary residences, more often than not cottages, yeah. right? That were kind of purchased for the family when money was really cheap, and now that money is really expensive. I think those communities, there's probably some additional suffering and uncomfortableness, and I think that those are probably going to continue to trend the same way they've trended in the last 6 months, right? You're at the tail end of this market cycle, but people are feeling that pinch, right? I think in core markets that, using Cameron's words, fundamentals are more in place, right? Those are certainly in the lower parts of the Lower Mainland. And I would say that that's everywhere from Chilliwack all the way to downtown. I think in those markets, it's probably a few months ago, right? It's hard to imagine how that optimism that we're feeling right now, when you open a newspaper, the headlines are strong. It seems like there's going to be this acute moment in time where real estate just runs the dam that Cam's talking about. It's going to break mm-hmm. and we're going to see some really big appreciation values, I think, it's hard to say whether it's Q1, Q2, or whether that comes at the end of the year.
I think part of the problem that I have, and I even want to blame our politicians, is we throw around these numbers like, you know, oh, we have 50,000 people coming to the province every year, or, 25,000 housing starts, and no one can really kind of, have a perspective of what that is. So, when we were, we were here and Ryan was taking his shirt off, that was 8 months ago. Our province grew 35,000 people since July. And Ryan, your numbers there, how many, we released 16,000 all of 23, of which only less than 7,000 have been purchased as of yet. We are, I'm stating the obvious, but there's just such a massive gap. Mm-hmm. On the last show, I was talking about that we need to build in the next 3 years a city the size of Burnaby in British Columbia. Every single housing unit and bridge and service and road and et cetera. And, and here we are back with you guys and,
there's only two Burnabys.
Yeah. 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 And by the way, when I say those new residents moving here, those are permanent residents. That doesn't include, all the students and everything else that we're also having to accommodate. So anyways, we are so behind the eight ball and we are never going to catch up. And the comment you made before about the cities opening up all the supply and look what all the municipalities are doing and the provincial government, well, they finally woken up to this, but we can't deliver that. There's no way we can construct that as an industry. We just don't have the infrastructure, the labor force, or even the materials or anything to build it. And even if we did, it's only going to put pressure on prices. So
yeah.
Anyways.
And we should clarify, Ryan had his shirt off. We were recording a podcast at that time. But what else I was
going to... Going back and looking for that one.
Yeah. It was
we'll have it in the show notes.
It was 46 degrees here. It was a sweat ledger.
But does that move... Do you think unlocking maybe some of the zoning, does that move the needle in any kind of meaningful way? Or what was your first impression when that was announced?
I love the fact that we're seeing... levels of government, particularly senior levels of government, recognize that it's an issue. It's just been so much bureaucracy and so much NIMBYism that it's great that we can start to tackle that, some of those items. But it's really a long overdue baby step. And as John Stavell said at UDI last week, that I really agreed with, is that, there's going to be a lot of still uncertainty, complexity, and things to figure out, but it's really showing a cultural shift at the municipal level and the government level to say, hey, this matters. We need housing and we got to get out of the way and start to put things in place that really encourage housing to come to market. And so, yes, it's a start. And these broad brushes, in many cases, don't make sense. There's so many cases where it was kind of maybe not as thoughtful as it could be, but the worst case would be if we did nothing. If we just sat back and didn't do anything, then that would be terrible. But nevertheless, it's a good first step. But as I said before, we just can't deliver that housing, and certainly it's not going to create a huge land rush and making millionaires because someone happens to own a single family house within 400 meters of a SkyTrain station. I think that's going to be overblown a little bit. But nevertheless, it is a good step.
I mean, it matters, right? Every additional square footage of density that finds its way, it matters in every marketplace. But it's not just about the density. It's, who's going to construct it?
Right.
Right. Who's actually going to build? Who's going to finance it? Right. I think when you just look at the overall landscape, it's really hard to imagine how at the peak, we're somewhere in the mid 40,000 doors per year of housing starts, and we need to be building somewhere around 70,000, right? And to make up that delta is really hard to understand anytime soon, how we can even change policy. Mm-hmm. It's incredible that we have all three levels of government now on this problem. I think a consolidated housing platform is probably going to be really supportive of making some of those right decisions, but we're 10 to 20 years out before we get ahead of this demand. And so from that perspective, if you're investing in this marketplace and you're looking at like where and when, it's like Cam's right, you don't need to look at the months. You just need to look at the 5 and 10 year trends. And the moment that you see that demand is outpacing construction by 30 to 40% every single year, likely for the next 10 years, it's really clear where that ball is going to go.
A real simple test of this consumer sentiment long-term is to ask people, would they liquidate their real estate And everyone's known. They're sitting on their hands and waiting, but they know.
2023 was a perfect example, right? That was basically the verdict.
You bet.
No.
You know, they you know, if it's primary residence, there's no capital gain implication. And if they could have got what they bought for it and paid off their mortgage and just stepped out of the market and stick it in cash or whatever, how many people actually did that?
Yeah.
You know, and so I think the real test here is people want to be long in real estate, but they're just trying to be a bit patient here and watch things. And that's, I think that's a prudent thing to do. But hopefully we can reflect back in a year from now in this conversation to say that, yeah, we nailed the window there.
Well, you know what, that's probably a great place to put out some numbers here for the pre-sale market in 2024. My understanding based on the conversation so far is more inventory in the latter half of 2024 and a more robust market in the latter half of 2024 is what MLA Intel is suggesting. Can you kind of unpack that a little bit in terms of where are we at the end of 2024?
What we're proposing is again, similar to 2023, a more average 10-year landscape for transactions and for units released. So our expectation is a little bit less in terms of the number of doors that find their way into the market. Last year was just over 16,000, had an opportunity.
Oh, wow.
We released 13,000, and of the 13 that actually found its way into the market, we transacted on about 45, 46% of that. This year, not too dissimilar. We think around 13,500 homes will launch, right? So they'll be available for purchase and maybe an absorption rate that's a little bit less than last year. And the reason why we think that it's going to be a very similar tone is that we still do have a lot of headwinds in Q1 and Q2, right? Buyer confidence is our expectation. It's going to continue to grow. Right. We think that interest rates will continue to be unlocked, and that's going to be a really strong signal to the marketplace that maybe the challenges of the real estate market are a little bit behind us. They're in the rear view. That's going to create a lot of optimism, and we'll start to see those housing starts push. The big question is when to launch right now for our development partners, right? You guys were asking on the elevator right up, what's been going on so far January. And what we were sharing is really since October, it's been flat out. Like, that's just the reality of it. Right. We know that there's an incredible amount of inventory that's in a position to come to market. It's our jobs right now to try to understand that timing, right? To build really strong strategy. And I think the programs that are going to be successful in 2024, they're going to have a lot of value built into them, right? And that's going to be everything from thoughtfully designed, very efficient floor plans all the way through to like, what are the incentive structures in place for our home buyers and for our agent partners. We're spending our time on that right now. So Q1, Q2, maybe less launches than we'd expect, but a really strong flow of new programs into the market starting Q3, Q4. And I think all of them will be looking for what do those tests look like in Q1 and Q2 at the beginning of the year, right? Everyone's looking for those early signals in terms of how recovery's happened.
What about the resale market?
Oh, you guys, that's your bread and butter. That's my question for you.
How about hottest pre-sale markets? Like, where geographically, where do you think the opportunities will be this year?
Also, not to go back to Cameron's point about best value being in some of those languishing markets, name names.
Oh, okay. We're getting into it. Making a prediction over an entire year averages the entire year. We have seasonality. Summers are slower. The December holiday season is a little slower. Typically, sometimes we try to bring a project into that window, knowing we're going to be less competitive during those times. And then it's the spring market and the fall, the fall winter market is kind of one window, and the next is the spring market. And so, quite often, markets are they're two totally different markets, between now and the summer, and then the fall. So I think we kind of spoke on that a little bit, and. When we were summarizing and thinking about our year, and Ryan was speaking to that, I still think it might be a better buying opportunity for a consumer between now and the summer. Although the broader market might be a little less activity, so I would encourage a buyer if they're thinking to get into home ownership or to add to the investment portfolio now between now and the summer, I think is a good buying time. So I just wanted to clarify that. But specifically, your question on the markets, I really like some of the I like West Side, Canby Corridor. You know, let's put this in perspective. Two towers in Burnaby, and we saw numerous towers come to market last year. You know, two towers would be 700 units. We haven't seen 700 units released in Canby Corridor in 2 years. It's an undersupplied market. And so, and the value delta between, you know, the Canby Corridor and something like Metrotown is actually pretty, it's not a huge delta. It's actually, you know, good value. And I think when Oak Ridge gets completed, and that really becomes, you know, one of the world-class, not just a mall, but one of the world-class commercial hubs. I think it's going to elevate the values and a trickle-down effect on all along the Canby Corridor and, you know, in the surrounding areas. So I think it's something to look at. I think downtown as well, but I would be a little cautious on the super high end. I'm thinking a little bit more of the middle of the bell curve downtown. You know, you can buy resale downtown, as you guys know, for, gosh, not much more than $1,000. $1,200 a foot can buy you a quality piece of real estate there. And that is just, you know, phenomenal value in my view, long-term. I know downtown after COVID has had some issues with less people working there, but it's slowly coming back. And I think that's a great opportunity. But nevertheless, those major centers, North Road, Burnaby, Coquitlam, Surrey City Center, those areas that are taking a lot of density now, they're going to continue to have incredible momentum. So I'm giving you a very wishy-washy answer to say that those areas that have seen momentum are going to continue to see momentum. I think that if somebody is looking for a little bit more of a boutique location or a location where it's much harder to unlock supply, I think there's going to see more upside potential. So again, some of the areas are already mentioned. And then I also think some of the secondary markets are going to continue to be great opportunities. You know, Kelowna now was... Got hit pretty hard over 2023 and the short-term rental policies that showed up. You know, I think that's going to take, you know, 6 months to a year to maybe shake out. But long-term, I think that they're going to be a great value in some of those markets too.
Well, I'll build on that a little bit. I think it kind of feels like you just said everywhere.
Well, buy real estate.
Just buy real estate now. Yeah. Truly though, over a decade, any one of those geographies is going to perform well when you have a 10-year or 20-year time horizon, right? I think that's the point is from a macro perspective, at this moment in time, you know, you ask where the bottom is, there's going to be incredible deals in resale and there's going to be incredible deals in pre-sale over the next 2 quarters. Just like that is very clear. You know, I think, you know, we're active in almost every major community throughout the Lower Mainland right now, either with projects in market or programs that are being designed for that market. And it truly is going to be really patchy. What we're coming to learn about every market is that everyone has maybe an optimal time to launch and they don't all line up, right? That's very clear to us. When it comes to resale though, you know, the easy way that I think about it, and again, this is just when I try to follow some of the data and some of the trends that you guys have done a really good job of sharing is, I think the way that I'd share it is the markets that ran post-COVID, right? The markets that truly bumped up because of that revision to the formula of how you add or how you think about value in those suburban areas, those are also the markets that for the most part have been hit, right? Over the last 12 months, they had a lot of space to be able to come off. You look at Vancouver West Side, you know, it didn't rise much and it certainly didn't depreciate much, right? It's held very, very constant. The downtown core isn't too far off of that. It never went up and never really went down. It's still hovering. I think the markets that really ran, you know, Cloverdale, Delta, Chilliwack, Abbotsford, Langley, like those markets appreciated, and specifically like single family did well in them, but like apartment product did really well in them, right? In many of those markets, it's up over 200% over the last 18 months or 2 years. And so I think those are the markets that are probably have come down quite a bit, anywhere from like 10%, in some cases 20% consecutively. Those are the markets over the next 6 months to really watch because one, they're more affordable, right? So when you think about immigrants, right? Our immigration policy has been really strong. They're going to rent for a period of time and then they find their way into that market generally year three, year four, year five. They're going to drive and fuel some of those secondaries. And so there's a reason why Surrey is going to be top of the list, but I think you go a little bit further east like Chilliwack, or you look a little bit further north, right? Maybe into that Port Coquitlam. Those markets seem to be so robust, so resilient over the last 12 months. And I think they're set up really well to perform well, maybe over the next 24 months.
Thoughts on Penticton?
I mean,
I can't help but
just general thoughts. Just, though
it's changing.
It is though, right? I mean, I was just talking to somebody about how advanced that hospital, the new hospital, is going to be, and
when you think about all these boomers thinking about where they want to be in proximity to like a fantastic hospital, right? Just, and it, there seems to be a lot of hype around Penticton, but I know it's a tough nut to crack, I think, in terms of changing quickly.
So many markets in the Okanagan right now are hugely impacted from rates, right? And then we have recent shifts in the Short-Term Accommodations Act, right? That really impacts Airbnb and revenue. And so I think those markets, it's going to be a pause, wait and see how they perform in Q1 and Q2, more so than you're going to see in some of these other markets. And so my guess is the fuse on those markets before they really take off, it's quite a bit longer. But you're right, infrastructure that's gone into Penticton is incredible. I think there's a lot of amenities there that allow to service an older demographic really well, right? And then you also have still a younger generation that is somewhat freed up from having to be in the office every single day. They've selected the Okanagan parts of it. I think part of it is just raw affordability, right? Penticton still, you know, relative Penticton, Kelowna, they're still very expensive pieces of real estate there. You look at some of the, even the surrounding markets, like, you know, they go a little bit further up the valley, whether you're looking at like Vernon or Kamloops. I think all of that is going to probably perform quite nicely, but I just don't see it happening as early on as parts of the lower mainland.
Like a Chilliwack.
Like a Chilliwack. Like, yeah. like a really good example, like Chilliwack, Abbotsford, and Langley, right? I mean, yeah. Pieces of real estate that are going to transact are the ones that are the most affordable today. And, you know, in some of those cities, you're going to see concrete or four-story and six-story move in and provide density to traditionally more single-family or townhouse type purchases. And I think that affordability is going to offer in like terms of one bedrooms and two bedrooms gives a little bit more upside. And I think that that's what drove those price points over the last 2 years in those communities, right? It's on the back of, you know, low aggregate purchase price transactions. And so, you know, that's probably going to be the path forward because I think it's been the path when you look backwards.
Makes sense. All right. What's going to be the lagging market in the lower mainland?
I thought the show, you guys, like there's a lot of great data there and it really caused me to go back and dive a little bit deeper into it. And it felt like there is some trends that Or certainly some breadcrumbs in terms of where it might be going.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of felt, and again, this only came out of the listening to your guys' discussion because you know we spent all of our time in presale. Resale obviously has some impact when it comes to the markets that were engaged in the lower mainland, but it felt like the Sunshine Coast and Bowen were the two highlights for me of really seeing those price points come off, right? And,
yeah.
and wanting to spend a little bit more time trying to understand why that is. And it felt like, you know, my guess is because some of those locations were purchased with recreational intention.
Yeah.
Right. And then so maybe there's a little bit of pullback, but there's these great communities like for example, in Nanaimo, right? Like that's affordable housing,
mm-hmm.
right? You'll be able to purchase townhome in that community that'll be equally as livable as any part of the lower mainland. So it has a grassroots feel. You have really strong values in that community. You can't not get excited about some of those locations.
Yeah, I'm just going to layer on the fact that those communities, which includes a lot of the recreational communities, but it also includes the high-end real estate, waterfront, use that as an example, where something, where supply cannot respond to demand. It's almost a fixed supply or you know, Bowen Island can't just add a whole lot of supply. Yeah. But when the market shows up and or the demand shows up, the demand spikes, supply can't respond to that. So the values jump.
Mm-hmm.
But the downside of that is equally the same. So the high-end single-family market has seen that come off, you know, quite a bit, and can turn the other way equally as fast. So it's important for I think for us to think about what are those markets where the industry and supply can respond to demand, and what are those that can't, or has more difficulty in doing that in a meaningful way. So you know, obviously, rarefied real estate has potentially the most maybe long-term appreciation potential, but it can also, if demand turns off, it can go the other way pretty quick.
Right.
You know, one that stood out for me is Surrey, right? Like there, it's like the data felt very clear on some of those more affordable markets, but Surrey was a performer over the last 12 months.
And I feel like we've talked about Surrey as the values got so,
it's like detached
so high, but it's still, it feels like the demand there is just insatiable in a lot of ways, right?
Like I feel like certain people want to be there regardless. And it's regardless of the price point, that's where it's like they want to live in Surrey.
Well, 50% of our province's housing starts will be Surrey, Langley, Abbotsford. So yep. I think that sentiment underestimates just, you know, what a large population base and geographical area that that is. And so, you know, we on the pre-sale side, we get highlighted around some of the more, you know, obvious projects, the higher density projects. But if you look at the whole region, the amount of housing that is getting created there, needing to be created there to satisfy the demand is huge.
It's not necessarily a broad stroke, right? Like the communities that we're doing really well, or that seem to be doing really well, they're not in the middle of nowhere with nothing around them. A lot of the communities that are performing, they have this pocket in the central part of the community that's an activated zone, right? Where you can maybe recreate some of the feelings that you have around energy centers, like whether it's Brentwood or Metrotown or the downtown core. It has that feeling of activation, right? It has that feeling of busyness. And I think it felt like for us, they're in close proximity to also maybe like a 5 to 10 minute ride of some sort of outdoor greenery, like whether it's trail systems or whether it's like true recreation that you can do with the family on the weekend. And so, I mean, something that we're paying close attention to, but you know, any of those communities that seem to kind of capture all of it, and you know, Port Coquitlam is a really good example of this, right? Port Moody, another really good example of this, like, you know, and Penticton, right? Again, like there's parts of that community. Kelowna has parts of that community as well. I think those are probably the ones to pay close attention to.
There's one little piece that I wanted to share, which is a little bit along these themes. And that is just the difference from resale and presale. Ryan asked a question, how's the resale market? And so there's always you take two pieces of real estate. One is brand new, never been occupied, and a home that might be in great shape, but it's, you know, 5 or 6 years old or something like that. There's a value differential between those two. And it's somewhere between 7 and 10% historically, somewhere along the lines, which is, I'll just call it a rule of thumb. That can be, you know, more expensive real estate that can, or ones where people are a little more price sensitive, you know, maybe that's a little tighter, but in a condo basis, which is mostly a condo and multifamily basis, it's usually around 10% differential as a rule of thumb. But then it's the time to deliver it. So it's roughly between 2 and 4% per year to deliver it. So if it's a tower is about 3 to 4 years out, so you know that's going to be the 10% plus 2 to 4 times the 3 years. So that's going to be roughly between 60 and 22% is about a normalized historical differential. So if someone's in Metrotown says, "Oh my gosh, I can buy this thing for $1,100 a foot," or they could buy brand new for $1,300 a foot. You know, looking at all the historical numbers, this is not me making up, looking at all the historical numbers through the down cycles and the up cycles, there's roughly 16-22% differential between those two markets. And if it's an outlier, then you're going to have either a good deal, depending on if the pre-sale is really close to the resale values, then that pre-sale is exceptional value. If you find a resale unit that is beyond 22% from what you can buy new for, then that is an outlier in value. And so we are seeing that gap is in some markets has grown a little bit, but now it's pretty much tightened up again. So it's in kind of a normal band of that differential. A frame project, you know, if it's 1 year out, it'd be 12 to 14% difference. To a frame project, you know, if it's delivering it in a year from now. So now those are kind of rules of thumb, but when our team did all the analysis, that kind of
worked. That is, I feel like there's a bunch of people with spreadsheets out there that are going to love that tidbit.
They can test me on this. Oh man, this one. Well, there's going to be outliers, but those outliers show anomalies in the market, right? And so I think that's why, back to the earlier conversation we had about people really doing their homework, looking around, finding that relative value, and the market. Now a lot of people are buying with long delivery days, you know, delivery dates, but they're playing that gap. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying, hey, you know, we can wait 4 years to take possession of this. By then we expect or forecasting interest rates to be lower. Some are making that bet. The economists of the world say that they'll be right, but you never know. But that's what the majority are doing. And that's why it's maintaining that value gap.
Yeah, we've talked about that on the show, about going into certain areas where there's a lot of new construction and looking at what, you know, within 10-year-old buildings, concrete, maybe in the area, like what are they selling at? And if that gap's too wide, going in. And partly because I think project marketing companies are fantastic marketers and more hype to the area as well. And obviously more commercial space infrastructure filling in, but it is a good strategy if you have that.
Yeah, those numbers are super useful.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go a step further though. Those projects that may only be 5 years old, but they were planned 10 years ago. So it's hard to make the apples to apples comparison. The units might be bigger. The amenities may not be that great, or, you know, even if they're well-maintained buildings, they were conceived 10 years ago and their specs and their finishes, would be a step down. And so you kind of stack it all up. And so today we and our development partners are very carefully trying to make sure that we're curating real estate to meet the demands of today's housing consumer. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the real estate has evolved. The units are, you know, maybe a little more thoughtful, or, you know, they might have that work from home workstation or whatever. You know, there's something to address today's demands of the market. So that partly shows up in the value proposition. So yes, you can find a 650 square foot one bedroom, but it could be poorly laid out and terrible, and, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't make any sense. And we could maybe have a much more efficient 540 square foot one bedroom. And so obviously on a price per foot basis, it'll be a lot higher, but on an absolute basis, it might be quite close in value. So I think it's important that even an investor, if they're never going to live in it, they're still looking at it with that lens. They're really saying, you know, what is suiting today's housing consumer? What is thoughtful real estate, not just within the four walls, but within the building? And so there's going to be that value gap no matter what. And mm-hmm. so to really kind of evaluate that, and my percentages that I threw out there that our team has discovered and evaluated, you know, those are rules and thumb, but they show up because of a lot of those nuances that I just described.
I mean, there's some markets that number is $500 a square foot, right? Maybe in some cases, maybe even a bit more than that. And then there's other markets. Coquitlam's a good example of this. You know, very resilient market, strong market, and that's because it's a melting pot, right? You have so many different cultures that are looking towards that area and being able to support lifestyle there. You know, there was a period of time where Coquitlam resale pricing was selling $50 off of pre-sale pricing, right? When that gap is that tight, you know that there's possible expansion on pricing. And there's a few markets throughout the lower mainland. It's not 50 anymore, mm-hmm. but certainly $100 to $200 per square foot difference. And when you start to see it being that tight, you know that there's a real upside potentially for an investor if they are looking for a long-term play.
Fantastic. Those are two very useful, actionable kind of takeaways there. We do have this segment called the Five Wire. Five quick questions to end the show. You got time for that?
Sounds familiar. You bet.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate. Hey, that sounds familiar. Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems. With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs. We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country. There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
One book you've read recently that you would recommend?
I was telling Ryan, we both are love to read, and I'm a hiker, so I'm always doing Audible, and I read three books over the holidays, and all three were terrible.
Wow.
I didn't want to share what they were, but all three, I tried my best to get into them, I finished one, and the other ones.
Were they business books or were they?
No, I don't read a whole lot of business books. You know, I like fiction, I like history, and so. Anyways, maybe I should have read a business book. Anyways, but I will say that I've been listening to a podcast, The Founders
oh,
podcast.
Yeah.
And I love it because it's really a book review of you know, famous founders and their life lessons. And, you know, they're nice little nuggets, about 45 minutes to an hour. You really get a terrific sense of this individual. And it's well recommended.
Yeah, I started listening to that as well.
You get sick and tired of the Vancouver podcast.
I don't want to. But it's funny. It's such a smart idea that guy goes in and kind of breaks it down. And
He's got a goal to do 1,369 books, I think. And, and he's already done over, you know, he's less than 1,000 to go. And he's just methodically going through them.
It's
pretty awesome.
You know what? And I went back to the early days, which I'd never recommend anybody do to this show. Either, but it was like pretty, like when he started, like any podcast, right? I'm sure it gets a lot better. But the idea of that is like, man, and he's built a massive following. Like it's just goes to show.
One other thing I'll admit to is that I listened to your podcast. I tried to read most of the books of your guests. And so I've read probably, you know, three or four that have been great recommendations that I would have never picked up on my own.
So that's good. I thought you were going to say the last three.
Yeah. Those ones on the holidays.
The terrible ones I'm not going to mention. And Ryan?
Yeah, I kind of like Cam. I spend a lot of time reading. I'm on this kick of going back through all of the classics that I may or may not have read in grade school.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really enjoying a couple of them, and one that I polished off recently was Orwell, 1984.
Okay.
Went back to that was really fun. Just to like, I remember how it made me feel back when I was in grade school, and it's funny, like it's actually much worse now. I think when I read it, like just the feelings of emotion around what that world could feel like. And then one that I'm really loving right now, I just dropped it off to you guys. It's, Green Lights, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
Just it's really soft, but, there's a couple of big takeaways in there. One of my favorite lines that he uses, Cam, you've read it. So, you'll remember this is, earn your Saturdays. Just like make sure that whatever you're doing in life, that you're always earning those weekends. And that was something that kind of stands
out. Oh, that's a great one. I was actually on a beach in December, and I looked over, and a young woman was reading 1984, like on the beach, and it was like this beautiful day. And I was going, like, "That's not a great beach read." And then I looked down, and I was reading Cormac McCarthy's *The Road*, which is even worse. So yeah. Anyways,
and this was all aligning when that Sam Altman stuff was happening with OpenAI, right? And so it's just,
right.
The 1984 feels like it was very prescient. I don't know, when I read that in the early 90s or whenever I did, it seemed like kind of a far off idea with it. It's less far off now.
Well, that's the shocking part of it to me was, you know, there's aspects of our society where it's actually much worse.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's others that we've actually done a really good job of managing.
Ah, that's a great one. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Oh, man. I'm going to say, I feel like I've upped my sauna game lately. I'm doing a good job of that. I'm liking that.
You were doing cold plunges, been doing those. You were 10 years ahead of the curve
I've been
that.
Doing those for a while, but the sauna has been a lot of fun. And then probably the other habit that I'm really liking right now is, Ash and I, my wife, Ashley, we take tons of photos. And so every day we're just like, hey, what would be like the photo of the day that we're thinking about, right? And more often than it's just another photo of one of our children, but it's every day we're trying to highlight one of them and keep it going. And that was a friend of mine recommended that, and we've been doing it. It's been a lot of fun.
Is the sauna an infrared, or is it a?
It's traditional. Yeah.
Traditional.
Yeah. It's an electric, you know, you kind of, nice. you run it at the regular temperatures, but what I'm really liking about it is we have it in our home. And so it's been a really great place where Ash and I are just on that train. And so, not only are we getting some heat, but it's also just a nice time to talk about the day.
Totally.
Yeah.
Nice. And Cameron?
Last time I was here, I was in crutches. I had an Achilles. Yeah. I had an Achilles injury. And so this is kind of boring, but I'm just doing stretching and rehab exercises religiously. And it's great because not only am I improving, you know, my health of my leg, but it's just kind of very cathartic and, you know, almost like my Zen time that I do every day. And so I do it in the evenings, and it's awesome.
It's a great one.
Yeah.
Anything you guys have been binge watching over the holidays or since? Favorite movie?
Oh, man, I just fell back into Yellowstone. It's so good.
Yeah. I got lost in the last season. There was too many dancing horses, but the first couple seasons were great. Yellowstone. There's actually a group that has it's like a theme hotel in Montana called Yellowstone, where I think you can, you know, rich people go and pretend to be cowboys for 2 weeks or so.
We used to call that City Slickers.
That's the idea. But anyways, there's a, I just saw it the other day. But how about you, Cameron?
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. I'm close. We finally broke down and subscribe to whatever one is doing 1984. Which one's doing 1984 now? Or 1884,
I should say.
1884, yeah. 1884. Your book, Paramount? Paramount. Anyways, we, after watching Yellowstone and loving that, we
held off. Is that the spinoff?
Yeah. We held off. And finally, we, you know, splurged for the $10 a month or whatever just so we could watch 1884.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's excellent. It's very different, which is kind of cool. So,
wow.
It's cool, yeah. We're right in the middle of it.
It's great. I feel like you guys are on enough where favorite band can't be the question. We got to do like,
what are you listening to lately?
I'm like sad and also really happy. We're all about T-Swift right now. Like, I have two daughters, 9 and 6, yeah. And like, yeah. Every party, every weekend, it's like Swiftie.
Could be worse, honestly.
Yeah.
Could be worse.
There's more dads.
Yeah. I feel like
T-Swift.
Yeah, I feel like
just
it's
by virtue.
Yeah. And the best is that the daughters are singing it so much. Brooke and Harper are just hammering on it. And then Ashley's singing it. And I'm doing my best to keep up.
Mine's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, but also kid influenced. My son, daughter, 21, 23, are super into heavy metal. My son's crazy.
I remember this, yeah.
But to the point where, that's probably came up the last one, the one I'm listening to. But in the fall, we went to a heavy metal festival in California. And it was a Metallica, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, AC/DC, everybody. So I spent 3 days in earplugs. And so I'm saying it's probably a little bit more in that spectrum these days.
Were you into metal growing up? Or is
no,
this like...
I wasn't. Wow. You know, so, you know... Obviously, you know, grew up in that era with all those big hair bands, but I wasn't, you know, crazy into it, but it's all,
wow, that's
it's, I got to, you know, relive it. It's pretty awesome.
It's great. Last but not least, something you have purchased for under $1,500 that has had a positive influence on your life recently.
So this could, Valentine's Day is coming up, right? So this could be a good idea for anyone for their better halves. I got, careful here. This is like a super luxury. Yeah. It's probably like, you know, $1,200, something like that. I got a Dyson V11 vacuum cleaner. It's a stand-up vacuum. It is awesome. I, you know, get way more use out of it just because it's so convenient.
Yeah.
Works. It's fantastic. Highly recommended.
I'm going to say proceed with caution when you buy your wife a vacuum.
Oh, no, I didn't say by the
significant
wife.
Other.
Anyone listening for the significant other.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
You're putting words in the mouth. There. It's quite amazing though.
Vacuum or running shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
So it wasn't necessarily a thing, but Ash and I went away to kind of like a wellness resort. But what was really great about it is that they have this policy, just no cell phones, like no connection for 48 hours.
Wow.
Right. And like I haven't been off my phone like that, probably since like ever.
Yeah. Phones were created.
10, right?
Yeah.
and just like to be able to just sit with some thoughts, right. And like be able to kind of like build some stuff out. And, you know, there's a ton of recreation there and some really good food, but for the most part, it's just like, it's about presence with your partner and presence with thought. And so that was really enjoyable.
And did you find it hard for the first couple hours? Was there,
you know, like you get these, you get like you start with something and then you see it through. Right. You're left with an idea. And I think that was the big takeaway for both Ash and I was that you give some perspective and some reflection to your life, but it came back to work for us. Right. It was just, you know, you have a perspective around maybe what the data is showing or where the market's going. And then to be able to have like 2 hours or 3 hours of thinking that through is
where you're not like, right.
Squirrel.
Yeah. Yeah. Squirrel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Car. Yeah. Really good at chasing cars.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there, but thanks so much for taking the time, Cameron and Ryan. And how can people learn out more about MLA Canada and, of course, MLA Intel Report?
You know, we mentioned it earlier, but watching our newswire every morning is a great way to stay apprised of not only what's happening in the market and the headlines around Canadian Real Estate, Vancouver Real Estate, but also future projects or any of the information that we circulate as well, including our pre-sale pulse that we do on a frequent basis, which is a fantastic summary of the month and the look forward. So I encourage everyone to sign up if they're not already to the MLA Newswire.
I second that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a good one.
All right. Well, thanks again for taking the time.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you, guys.
So there you have, folks, our discussion with Cameron McNeil and Ryan Lalonde, executive directors from MLA Canada.
You know, it's funny, but I mean, really, you get talking, you forget that you're even recording, like immediately, and usually it's just with these guys because we have a really good conversation.
The rapport is just fantastic.
What did I say? Like, I got to go back and listen to that because you almost get too comfortable in here.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is one I'm going to listen to a second time, that's for sure. Some really interesting, again, like the gaps in the pre-sale, resale market stand out.
Huge.
There's so many takeaways. I'm blanking on them right now, but I feel like this is one I'm going back with a notebook.
Yeah, the project launches and the absorption rates that Ryan was talking about. There's so many, I know, I feel like we covered a lot of ground here. But I think anybody who is really, really kind of likes to dig into the market or people in the industry are going to love this episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I hope you enjoyed that. What else do we have before we cut for the week? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the Live Wire. This is our weekly mailer. I feel like pre-sale is ramping up. We have some VIP access to a number of pre-sales that we send out on the Live Wire. We also have Deal of the Month. We have stats, different types of stats, stats before anyone else. And you can also dig into submarkets, which is really useful. We also have, of course, private client services.
Yeah, Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available on our site. Best time to be looking at PCS right now because you're going to see those sold prices. Set up your search, get notifications about new listings. This is the way to do it for sure. We should also say we're actually heading out to Whistler tomorrow.
That's right.
For a couple of days to go to the Be the Better Broker conference.
Is that what it's called? I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Dustin Woodhouse's
conference. This is, so Stephen Poloz is speaking.
No big deal.
One of the guests. There's some other really big names.
Well, leave it to Dustin, right? He's got brokers coming from across the country, but man, it's a who's who.
I'm there just to hear Dustin Woodhouse.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, he's clearly the draw. We're on some thread where he's clearly... he is the draw. There's no question about that. But some big guests. We might even be able to squeeze a podcast or two out of it.
You know what? Yeah. But, and I mean, really, my big thing is we're going to have probably one solid day, I think, at the actual
of
conference.
Skiing? Oh,
yeah. Right. Half day of skiing. But anyways, we're super excited. So if you are heading to that conference, look forward to seeing you there.
Absolutely. If you want to contact me about that or anything else, 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
You can also try that Kokomo line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We'll have a fantastic week. And next week, we're back with another great episode in the can. I just got to mention it again because I've thought about it a lot since we had this conversation. But Tom Davidoff is back.
Tom Davidoff is back, never to be missed. Hopefully we, this conference, this would be, I don't know if we're not live podcasting from the conference.
Kind of wish we were. We should almost be bringing a mobile studio here.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But stay tuned. smash that subscribe button at the very least, and you'll find out how it plays out.
Have a great week. Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.